Welcome to the Naracast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, Host A.
And I'm Host B. We've got a packed show for you today, diving into the intersection of cutting-edge artificial intelligence, the physical realities of hardware, and the shifting regulatory landscape.
Today, we are taking a hard look at the realities of deploying AI and robotics in the messy, unstructured real world. We've got a fascinating new study out of Stanford breaking down exactly what happens when you put an advanced AI chatbot in the room with a doctor trying to solve a complex medical case.
And spoiler alert, it challenges a lot of our assumptions about human expertise. We are also going to get a reality check on the robotics industry. Why is it that an AI can write flawless software in seconds, but building an autonomous robot that can reliably navigate a factory floor is still taking decades?
Plus, in our roundup, we'll hit some fresh drama out of the White House regarding AI leadership and political blacklists, new groundbreaking legislation in Colorado aimed at protecting teenagers from chatbots, and what's really going on with Claude's recent quality issues.
Let's get right into it.
Let's start with some fascinating and maybe slightly unsettling research out of Stanford regarding AI in the doctor's office. A new study published in Nature Medicine on February 5th looked at how well doctors perform when they have an AI chatbot as a co-pilot compared to using traditional resources.
And the results really challenge our assumptions about the hierarchy of medical expertise. They took 92 doctors in total. 46 were given chatbot support, and the other 46 were only allowed to use standard internet searches and traditional medical references. They then evaluated them on 5 de-identified complex patient cases.
The headline finding here is that the chatbots, when operating entirely on their own, actually outperformed the doctors who were using just the internet and standard references. The AI was better at what they call clinical management reasoning.
Right, and that specific term, clinical management reasoning, is crucial here. We aren't just talking about a multiple-choice diagnostic test where the AI identifies a rare disease. This is about nuanced, real-world decision-making. For example, a patient needs a certain protocol, but they have a history of adverse reactions or competing comorbidities. There often isn't a textbook right or wrong answer.
Exactly. It's the messy reality of medicine. But here's the kicker. When you paired the doctors with the LLM, they didn't outperform the chatbot alone. They performed as well as the chatbots. The AI essentially served as the ceiling for performance, and giving it to the doctors simply brought the human clinicians up to that baseline.
Which raises some really profound questions about the nature of human oversight. Co-senior authors Jonathan H. Chen and Adam Rodman highlighted that we are shifting from looking at AI's diagnostic accuracy to its role as a collaborative partner. But if the human AI team doesn't beat the AI alone, are the doctors actually adding value to the clinical reasoning, or are they just validating the machine's logic?
That's the tension. Critics argue that if models consistently outperform humans in these complex tasks, there's a massive risk of over-trusting the tools. If the chatbot is right 95% of the time, a doctor might stop heavily scrutinizing the output, which is incredibly dangerous for that remaining 5% where the AI might hallucinate or miss a subtle contextual clue.
And how does that impact medical training? If residents are relying on an LLM to navigate complex clinical management from day one, do they ever develop the independent critical reasoning skills necessary to catch those rare AI errors?
It's a valid concern. We want the efficiency and the comprehensive synthesis that an LLM provides. It can instantly recall every drug interaction and read the latest literature. But we still need the human clinician to look at the patient sitting in front of them and adapt those recommendations to the patient's complete lived history.
It definitely reframes the conversation. The AI isn't just a super-powered search engine anymore. It's an active participant in determining the treatment plan. Integrating this into clinical workflows safely is going to be the defining medical challenge of the next decade.
You know, digging deeper into the Nature Medicine study, it's worth highlighting how the control group was set up. The 46 doctors without the chatbot weren't flying blind. They had access to UpToDate, PubMed, and standard internet search. These are the exact tools a clinician would normally use when they encounter a difficult case.
That makes the chatbot's standalone performance even more staggering. It wasn't beating a doctor relying solely on memory. It was beating a doctor armed with the entirety of the internet's medical literature. It suggests the bottleneck in clinical reasoning isn't access to information, but the sheer cognitive load required to synthesize it quickly.
Exactly. When a patient presents with conflicting symptoms, human doctors have to mentally juggle dozens of variables. The LLM can hold all those variables in its context window simultaneously without suffering from cognitive fatigue.
But we also have to consider the liability aspect. If a doctor uses an LLM and the LLM suggests a treatment plan that the doctor agrees with, but it turns out to be wrong, who is at fault? The study showed doctors didn't improve upon the AI's baseline, which implies they might be deferring to it rather than challenging it.
That's a massive legal gray area. If the AI is statistically more accurate than the human, could a doctor eventually be sued for not following the AI's recommendation? We are entering a phase where the standard of care might legally require algorithmic consultation.
But the researchers were careful to note that this doesn't mean AI is ready to replace doctors entirely. The human element, communicating with the patient, understanding their values, and managing the emotional aspects of care remains entirely outside the AI's capabilities.
For now, at least. But it does mean the role of the physician is evolving rapidly from an oracle of knowledge to more of an editor and compassionate communicator of AI-generated treatment plans.
Moving from the clinic to the factory floor, let's talk about the persistent deployment gap in autonomous robotics. We see these incredible videos of agile robots doing backflips or LLMs writing flawless code, but commercial scaling of autonomous robots in the physical world is still moving at a glacial pace.
It really comes down to the math of reliability. In controlled settings, autonomous robotic systems routinely achieve 99% reliability. That sounds fantastic, until you realize that the remaining 1% consists of unpredictable edge cases, changing lighting, sensor anomalies, and erratic human behavior. And in the physical world, a 1% failure rate means property damage, disrupted supply chains, or serious injury.
Vivek Burnpurkar, the CEO of CyberWorks Robotics, put it bluntly. He stated, "It takes decades to collect and analyze real-world edge cases. It's a stark reminder that while software AI can iterate on millions of parameters overnight, hardware AI is bound by the laws of physics and the slow passage of time."
The scale of the industry makes this even more striking. In 2023 alone, there were 541,000 industrial robots installed globally, bringing the total operational stock to about 4.3 million units. But the vast majority of those are operating in highly structured, constrained environments. They are bolted to the floor, doing exactly the same motion in a cage where humans aren't allowed to step.
Right, because the moment you introduce true autonomy in an unstructured environment, the complexity explodes. You can't just fix this by scaling up a language model. Real-world deployment requires long-term data collection and tight system integration that simply can't be rushed.
And that brings up the limitation of simulation. A lot of companies claim they can bridge this gap by training their AI models in highly realistic synthetic environments. But simulation is only as good as the parameters you program into it. It simply cannot generate the completely bizarre one-in-a-million anomalies that happen in reality.
I want to go back to the idea of edge cases in robotics, because I think people underestimate what an edge case actually looks like in the physical world. It's not just a pedestrian stepping into the street. It's a plastic bag blowing across a LiDAR sensor, or a sudden change in ambient humidity affecting a camera lens.
Or a warehouse floor that was just mopped, changing the friction coefficient for a robot's tires. These are variables that humans adapt to subconsciously. But for a robotic system, an unexpected reflection from a puddle can completely break its spatial mapping algorithm.
Which is why Burnpurkar's point about decades of data collection is so critical. You can't simulate a puddle reflecting a specific type of fluorescent light that temporarily blinds a specific camera sensor. You just have to deploy the robot, let it fail, figure out why it failed, and update the system.
And doing that at scale is prohibitively expensive. You need fleets of robots operating in the real world, constantly streaming telemetry data back to the cloud just to capture those rare events. It's a massive capital expenditure before you even have a fully reliable product to sell.
This completely changes the investment thesis for robotics startups. You can't just build a cool prototype, raise a Series A, and expect to achieve product market fit in 18 months like a software company. Investors have to be willing to stomach a 10-year horizon of just collecting failure data.
Which explains why the most successful robotics deployments so far, like the 4.3 million industrial robots we mentioned, are in environments where you can engineer the edge cases out of existence. You don't make the robots smarter, you make the environment dumber. You restrict human access, control the lighting, and bolt everything down.
Critics of the current AI hype cycle argue that the industry's obsession with developing massive foundation models is actually a distraction. We are pouring billions into scaling parameters, but neglecting the incredibly unglamorous, tedious work of improving hardware reliability and conducting years of field testing.
It's the classic 80-20 rule, but magnified. The first 99% of autonomous capability took a few years to develop. Bridging that final 1% gap to achieve commercial viability in mission-critical environments might genuinely take the rest of our lifetimes.
It really reorients our timeline for the future. If you were expecting an autonomous robot butler to handle your household chores anytime soon, you might want to adjust your expectations. The physical world is just too messy.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick in our roundup.
Sounds good. What's first?
First up, the regulatory landscape for AI is heating up at the state level. Colorado has just introduced House Bill 26-1263, which specifically targets the risks conversational AI chatbots pose to minors. This is a really interesting pivot. While previous legislation in Colorado, like the 2024 Senate Bill 205, focused on algorithmic discrimination in high-stakes areas like housing and employment, this new bill is entirely focused on emotional and psychological safety.
Right. It requires companies to implement reasonable measures to prevent chatbots from generating sexually explicit content or fostering emotional dependence in teenagers. And it goes a step further on mental health. If a user expresses thoughts of self-harm, the chatbot is legally mandated to provide suicide prevention resources.
Companies also have to report how often these flags occur directly to the state attorney general. Violations are treated as infractions under the Colorado Consumer Protection Act, carrying fines of up to $1,000 per occurrence. It really highlights the practical challenge for national AI companies having to comply with a patchwork of state-specific safety requirements.
Next up, some significant staffing turbulence over at the White House. Colin Burns, an AI researcher who previously worked at Anthropic, was hired by the Commerce Department to lead the Center for AI Standards and Innovation.
But his tenure didn't last long. After just 4 days on the job, he was pushed out by the White House. Reportedly, officials were concerned about his background at Anthropic, a company the administration has been openly feuding with, even labeling it a national security risk.
It's a messy situation. White House officials apparently weren't briefed on Burns' selection in advance. He's been replaced by Chris Fall, a scientist with a long background in government and academia. But this incident really exposes a massive recruitment problem for the federal government.
Exactly. If you want top-tier AI talent to staff critical federal technology centers, that expertise is currently concentrated in a handful of private companies. If the administration maintains political litmus tests that blacklist alumni from leading labs, they are going to struggle to find people who actually understand these complex systems.
Speaking of Anthropic, a widely circulated blog post by developer Nikki Reinert is shedding light on growing user frustrations. Reinert published a post detailing their decision to cancel their Claude subscription, citing token limits, poor support, and most notably, declining model quality. This ties into a broader narrative users are calling AI shrinkflation. The perception is that models are getting less capable or more restrictive while subscription costs remain the same.
Interestingly, Anthropic actually acknowledged the issue. They confirmed that three independent bugs across Cloud Code, the Cloud Agent SDK, and Cloud Cowork caused a genuine drop in quality. They rolled out a fix in version 2.1.116 on April 20th.
They also admitted to lowering the default reasoning effort from high to medium back in March to help manage latency issues, which many users felt as a capability degradation.
Anthropic has reset usage limits for all subscribers as compensation, but it highlights the tension between managing massive compute demands and satisfying power users.
Finally, a bit of a psychological reality check for software engineers. Kevin Linga published a great piece in his newsletter titled On Sabotaging Projects by Overthinking, Scope Creep, and Structural Diffing.
It's a painfully relatable read. He uses his own recent experiences as case studies in self-sabotage. Instead of just building a minimal structural diff tool, he spent all his time researching complex semantic diffing frameworks.
He also talks about over-engineering a simple fuzzy file search tool by unnecessarily integrating LLM assistance. It perfectly captures that trap where the desire to build the perfect foundation prevents you from ever finishing the core product.
It sparks an interesting debate. Is over-engineering a personal failing, or is it a rational response to the frustration of dealing with inadequate existing tools? Either way, it's a great reminder to distinguish between necessary architectural planning and fatal scope creep.
That is going to do it for today's episode of the NarakaCast Tech Briefing. A lot of complex threads today, from the clinic to the factory floor and right up to the White House.
It really feels like we are moving past the initial hype phase of AI and hitting the hard, practical realities of integration and regulation.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Be sure to check our show notes for links to all the studies and articles we discussed today. We'll catch you next time with more updates from the frontier of tech.